Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. The U.S. and El Salvador won't return a wrongly deported man. U.S.-Iran nuclear talks have a long way to go, says Iran, and the Trump corruption train never stops. First, the U.S. and El Salvador won't return a wrongly deported man. The outrageous acts from the Trump administration come fast and furious, but none may be more dangerous than this one. In defiance of court decisions, both Trump's Justice Department and the El Salvador government of Nayib Bukele are refusing to return wrongly deported Kilmar Abrego Garcia to the U.S. Even though the U.S. government admits that the deportation was mistaken, and even though a federal judge and the Supreme Court unanimously agreed that the U.S. should facilitate Abrego Garcia's return, both Trump and Bukele are finding every excuse to refuse to comply. The Justice Department says it's not required to return Abrego Garcia, that his return depends on El Salvador releasing him, and that the U.S. is only required to facilitate Abrego Garcia's return when he seeks to re-enter the U.S. Tom Homott, the border czar, boasts that if Abrego Garcia is allowed to return, quote, he will be detained and removed again. As for Bukele, who presides over a notorious prison system and has been roundly condemned by human rights organizations, he says, how can I return him? It's a shabby, disgusting game these two authoritarian leaders are playing, and it puts us in a constitutional crisis. Will the Supreme Court take the next step of demanding Abrego Garcia's return? Trump said he would obey such a decision, but he hasn't obeyed the order to facilitate Abrego Garcia's return. Will a federal judge hold the government in contempt? She says the government has done nothing to bring the man back and seems prepared to depose Trump officials in order to see the records of their actions. But I fear that Trump will use this case as a test of his power, just as he has done with Harvard University, Paul Weiss Law Firm, and Mahmoud Khalil, the Columbia student, to see how far defiance of judges can go. Trump even mused, with Bukele sitting beside him, that U.S. citizens who commit violent crimes might be deported to El Salvador. The illegality of such an act hardly fazes him, or Bukele. Attorney General Pam Bondi said otherwise, we're not going to let people convicted of crimes go anywhere, and if we have to build more prisons in our country, we will do it, she said. Now, isn't that comforting? Next, Iran-U.S. nuclear talks have a long way to go, says Iran. The talks in Oman last Saturday concluded on what seemed to be a positive note. I think we are very close to a basis for negotiations, and if we can conclude this basis next week, we'll have gone a long way and we'll be able to start real negotiations based on that. That was the Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi. A White House statement said the talks were a step forward. Trump said aboard Air Force One, quote, nothing matters until you get it done, so I don't like talking about it, but it's going okay. The Iran situation is going pretty good, I think. So I guess both sides agree, as Churchill famously said, that jaw-jaw is better than war-war. The Israeli press is reporting statements by Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, that suggest the U.S. position is to cap, not eliminate, Iran's uranium enrichment program, and at the same very low level of enrichment that was specified in the initial nuclear deal under Obama. A New York Times report on April 11, based on conversations with two senior Iranian officials, said that the Supreme Leader, Ali Khamenei, agreed to the talks after close aides warned that the U.S.-Israel threat of attack was real and that failure to engage in talks with the U.S. would lead to regime instability. Specifically, according to the report, the Ayatollah was told that U.S.-Israeli attacks on Iran's two nuclear sites and the onset of war would so destabilize the already weak economy that people would rise up against the regime. With regime preservation on the line, Khamenei reversed his previous decision not to talk with the Americans, though insisting that the initial round of talks be indirect via Oman as an intermediary. Iran is in an unprecedentedly weak bargaining position. Its economy is in a shambles, its proxy forces fighting Israel have been gravely weakened, and neither Russia nor China is in a position to help resist the U.S. U.S. sanctions on China, moreover, would put a big dent in Iran's oil exports to China. Trump holds most of the cards now, including tight relations with Netanyahu's Israel, which has always been eager to attack Iran's nuclear facilities. When Netanyahu was in Washington the other week, Trump seemed to say that the U.S. would dictate an attack on Iran, but that Israel would carry it out. Let's not forget, however, that Trump walked away from the previous nuclear deal in 2018. If that deal had been enforced today, it would have kept Iran from being close to having a nuclear bomb. The Trump corruption train never stops, and here are two stops. First, did Trump engage in market manipulation? Shortly after U.S. stock markets opened on April 9, Trump wrote on his social media platform, "This is a great time to buy DJT." Less than 4 hours later, he shocked investors by announcing a 90-day pause on additional trade tariffs on most countries except China, sending share indexes soaring. Senator Chris Murphy asked, quote, "Trump's 9:30 a.m. tweet makes it clear he was eager for his people to make money off the private information only he knew. So who knew ahead of time, and how much money did they make?" Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene, for one, she made a bundle. And of course, Trump himself. His media and technology company jumped 21% after he announced the 90-day pause on tariffs. And the second stop, are tariff reductions for sale? No sooner did the Trump administration add to its tariff rate for China than an exception was granted for electronics imports. Was this a gift to Microsoft, NVIDIA, and Apple? Apple was reported to be in danger of huge losses if the 145% tariff on China stuck, since the price of iPhones would have been beyond reach. Expect a big donation from Apple and the others to Trump's war chest. But as for those not exempted from the new tariffs, Senator Elizabeth Warren said, quote, "Investors will not invest in the U.S. when Donald Trump is playing red light, green light with tariffs and saying, oh, and for my special donors, you get a special exemption." In other news, Chinese soldiers were captured in Ukraine. President Zelensky of Ukraine reported that Ukraine had captured two Chinese soldiers during the fighting. Proof of their nationality has been made known to China, which is investigating. It is still unknown whether the two Chinese soldiers captured were mercenaries, were part of a Chinese military unit, or belonged to China's intelligence services. It's also unclear what their actions in Ukraine were before being captured, how many Chinese soldiers have been fighting in Ukraine, or when and how they arrived. If this development is something more than an unofficial act, it would mean that China has broken its promise not to take a direct and active part in the war. Revocation of foreign student visas is more widespread than we thought. According to The Guardian, more than 600 international students and recent graduates in the U.S. have had their visas revoked or their legal status changed by the State Department, according to data aggregated from around the country. The data, collected by Inside Higher Education, shows that as of last week, more than 100 colleges and universities have identified more than 600 cases of students whose immigration status was changed by the Trump administration. These institutions say that their students have lost their F1 or J1 student visas. Various sources are reporting on the climate of fear that has gripped international student communities across the U.S. Concern about visas has led many to wipe out their social media accounts and steer clear of any kind of political involvement on campus. This situation will surely accelerate the decline of foreign student enrollment in U.S. schools that I previously reported. The U.S. and Mexico are engaged in a water dispute. Mexico has failed to comply with a treaty with the U.S. on water deliveries from the Rio Grande to Texas farmers. Under a 1944 treaty, Mexico must send 1.75 million acre-feet of water to the U.S. from the Rio Grande every 5 years. But in the treaty's current 5-year cycle, which is up in October, Mexico has sent less than 30% of the required water, according to data from the International Boundary and Water Commission. Mexico's President Claudia Sheinbaum has assured the Trump administration, which is threatening trade sanctions, that Texas will receive more water. But she points out that Mexico has had to deal with a drought that limits how much water Mexico can actually provide. This dispute looks like it could go either way. Next, Trump's disruption of the International Criminal Court, the ICC, takes a new turn. Earlier this year, the Trump administration ordered economic and travel sanctions against a lead prosecutor of the ICC, Karim Khan, for successfully bringing a war crimes charge and an arrest warrant against Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The order also prohibits U.S. citizens, permanent residents, and companies from providing this prosecutor with services and material support. Now, two international lawyers have brought suit against Trump, arguing that his order is unconstitutional and unlawful, and would put a chill on the lawyers' efforts to work with the ICC. One of the lawyers has been working with the ICC on the Rohingya genocide case in Myanmar, and the other has been seeking prosecution of the Taliban in Afghanistan for its oppression of women and girls. The first lawyer said that Trump's executive order, quote, doesn't just disrupt our work, it actively undermines international justice efforts and obstructs the path to accountability for communities facing unthinkable horrors. Greenland remains in Trump's sights. The administration continues to insist that it is going to acquire Greenland one way or another. The latest report is that it will do so by convincing Greenlanders, not by using force. Meantime, the commanding officer of the U.S. military base in Greenland has been fired for failing to fall in line with J.D. Vance's contention when he visited the base that Denmark had failed to give Greenland enough support. Colonel Susanna Myers wrote in an email, quote, I do not presume to understand current politics, but what I do know is the concerns of the U.S. administration discussed by Vice President Vance are not reflective of Pituffik Space Base. The base has Greenland and Denmark officers and flies three flags, as required under a 1951 defense agreement. Colonel Myers said after Vance departed, quote, I commit that for as long as I am lucky enough to lead this base, all of our flags will fly proudly, together. Now she's another victim of the Trump-Vance disloyalty campaign that has hit the military fairly hard. Next, a positive story for a change, Uruguay's Green Revolution. Natasha Hakimi Zapata writes in The Nation that, quote, Uruguay has gone from suffering frequent blackout and power cuts to relative energy sovereignty, based almost entirely on electricity generated from a stable mix of wind, solar, hydroelectric, and bioenergy sources, unquote. All citizens and schools have electricity. This energy revolution began in 2008, and by 2018, Uruguay had become a net energy exporter, mainly to Brazil and Argentina. A drought in 2008 provided the spur to creation of a national energy plan, one that married diversity of electricity sources managed by a state agency to social justice, quote, access to affordable energy as a human right. From 2017 to 2020, she says, 97% of the electricity generated in Uruguay came from renewable sources, making it one of the first countries in the world to reach that level. Uruguay consumes less fossil fuel today than it did 50 years ago, unquote. Still, there are problems, she reports. One is the high cost of electricity despite the savings from renewables. Those savings are being used to finance other government programs. Another problem is the privatization of wind power by multinational companies, contrary to the hope that the state would own all energy sources. Finally, an update from the Ukraine war. As the Trump administration waits for a Russian response to its so-called peace plan, there are reports of a rift between Trump's clearly pro-Russian envoy to the talks, Steve Witkoff, and his envoy to Ukraine, General Keith Kellogg. Witkoff seems to favor the Russian demand that the four Ukrainian provinces it occupies be acknowledged as a permanent part of Russia. The quickest way to a ceasefire, Witkoff has said. General Kellogg thinks that demand should be off the table, since Ukraine would never agree. Relatedly, Putin issued a decree March 20th to force Ukrainians in those occupied areas to accept Russian law and a Russian passport or be punished. The obvious motivation for the decree is to increase the number of citizens he can claim to be Russian so as to make the occupied territories more legitimately seem to be Russia's. Without a passport, a Ukrainian wouldn't be able to work legally or have access to medical or pension benefits. Russia has used this tactic before in two occupied regions of Georgia, Abkhazia and South Ossetia. That's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening and take good care.